Vic Sage and the Projectionist, hosts of the Saturday Frights podcast, while working in the Retroist vault, find themselves under assault from a force of evil, an evil from the Projectionist's past. In an effort to save the vault, they're forced to carry out an emergency lockdown. With no possibility of escape, the two must enter a makeshift portal, linking them to the Projectionist's haunted drive-in. Being shoved through the portal by his co-host, Vic Sage vanished. He awoke to find himself transported to the haunted drive-in, but in the past of an alternate timeline. Due to a malfunction in the portal, the duo were merged into one being, with Sage being stuck in the Projectionist's younger body and his co-host trapped deep within Sage's subconscious, acting as his voice of reason. The only link to their own timeline was a portable recording device, disguised as a small briefcase, acting as their only communication to the Retroist Vault and possibly their only way home.
All right, Projectionist, that should take care of the first feature tonight.
Assuming you threaded everything properly, I believe you've become halfway decent at splicing. We better check the speakers to be sure, though.
Is the town still empty?
No. Well, I run the office. And tend the cabins and grounds and do little errands for my mother. The one she allows I might be capable of doing.
I won't lie. I almost wish we didn't have to record tonight. I would love to watch Psycho and the Little Shop of Horrors up top. That was a nice double feature you suggested.
I feel it's best to stick as close as we can to the events of our own timeline, Victor.
Any particular reason why?
I fear that our interference here might have damaged the barriers between this timeline and ours. Thinned them, so to speak.
Okay, that doesn't sound good at all. But really, what is the worst that could happen?
Merely the complete erosion of the barrier, which would then thrust both timelines together, merging them violently, like what has happened to us, and very probably destroying both in the process.
Well, let's do what we can to make sure that doesn't happen. You totally know how to make me feel more comfortable, you know that?
You ask, Sage. In the least, it might cause breaches in the timeline, transporting us to nightmarish realities, even worse than what we find ourselves dealing with here.
You mean the 1960s? Sorry, that was a joke, Projectionist. Hey, look, the briefcase light is on. We are already recording. There must be a glitch in this laptop. It goes on and off, it seems, when it wants.
I still say that the Retroist has control of it. I would be willing to bet good money that he's using it to spy on us, Victor.
Yeah. Well, listeners, today we are going to be discussing a movie that I'm very fond of. 1984's Gremlins. Projectionist, you played this movie at the Haunted Drive-In, right?
Certainly. It was the first feature that weekend in June, followed by Firestarter.
Now that is an interesting double feature.
Gremlins had the true staying power. The audiences of Haddonfield flocked to it week after week. It had the honor of being the main feature for 6 straight weeks.
How did Firestarter fare?
Poorly. I replaced it with Streets of Fire the following week.
Oh man, I love that movie. But let's get back on subject. Gremlins was written by future Home Alone director Chris Columbus and directed by The Howling's Joe Dante. This film was produced by Steven Spielberg, and it's been said that due to the critics' attack on the violence of both Gremlins and Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom that year, Spielberg approached the MPAA, the Motion Picture Association of America, to come up with a new rating, and that is how the PG-13 rating came about.
I do suppose there are some scenes that might be a little too dark for the kiddies, eh?
Well, when Spielberg bought Chris Columbus's spec script, the film had an even darker tone. It wasn't intended to be the horror comedy we know and love.
In what way?
How about the fact in the original script, Billy's dog was going to be devoured? Or that his mother was slain by the gremlins, with her head being rolled down the stairs at the young man?
Oh my! Yes, darker indeed. Although, it sounds a little like the Critters film.
Yeah, I guess so. Although there was plenty of comedy in that film as well. It took a couple of script rewrites before Spielberg decided the mix of scares and laughs were right. Another huge difference was Gizmo. He was planned to become the main bad guy. Or Gremlin. Stripe wasn't even in the movie at this point. But the idea of Gizmo being evil was vetoed by Spielberg when he saw how cute the designs for the Mogwai were.
It makes me wish that we had an opportunity to view what surely would have been an R-rated horror picture.
Who knows? Maybe we could visit an alternative timeline and find out.
Really, Victor? Considering our circumstances, you shouldn't jest so. The forces of the universe don't take kindly to being mocked.
Okay. I'm just trying to lighten the mood here.
Well, don't. A comedian you are not.
Moving on. Let's jump into the brief synopsis. I doubt that any of our listeners haven't seen Gremlins before. Projectionist, what is that?
It's a portal, you don't. I warned you not to make light of our situation.
Well, how would making a joke cause that?
It would seem the universe hates you even more than I do. Try to hang on to something, you fool. Keep your grip, Victor. We're being pulled in.
Welcome to the Saturday Fun Podcast. I'm your co-host, Vic Sage. And without further ado, it's time to join the world's most famous projectionist, Todd Browning, as we both sit and talk about classic animated Saturday morning cartoons.
Hello, dear listeners. It's so good having you joining us here at the Retroist Vault once again on the Saturday Fun Podcast.
Especially with all the woes of late.
Now, Vic, we agreed we wouldn't focus on that. Our listeners at home and abroad are depending on us to help brighten their day, right?
Yeah, you're right. And with the subject of our show today, it might be a little easier. In all honesty, with that weekly address by President Whitmore the other night, we decided to break from the focus of our last 54 episodes of the podcast, shows like Turbo Teen or The Herculoids, etc., and take a crack at the popular 1985 animated film Care Bears the Movie.
Indeed. Before I jump into the synopsis of that celebrated film, I think we should take a good look at how the main characters, namely the Care Bears, came to be. You might be surprised to learn that these colorful and playful characters were first dreamed up by the American Greeting Corporation in 1981.
The card company?
The very one, Vic. Did you know that they were founded in 1906, the same year that Willis Carrier obtained a patent for the world's first air conditioner?
Here we go again, listeners. My friend is trying to make you all think he is old as dirt when he doesn't look a day over 25.
The company has come a long way from its days of selling cards from the back of a horse-drawn wagon. The Care Bears were created by a licensing arm of the American Greetings Corporation called Those Characters from Cleveland, and thanks to a meeting with some employees of Kenner Toys in attendance, it was decided that these colorful creations could be used in all manner of products, like collectible plush dolls, board games, animated television specials, a feature film, and then a Saturday morning cartoon series. Now, they were used to great effect on those greeting cards, to be sure. It has been reported that by 1987, the characters alone had been used on over 70 million of the company's cards.
I think it's safe to say, Todd, that the Care Bears were not just a marketing juggernaut back in the day, but continue to be incredibly popular.
Agreed. The jovial and individual looks of the bears themselves were designed and illustrated by Muriel Farian. Does that name ring a bell?
It does. Wait, it's on the tip of my tongue.
She helped craft the look of the also popular toy line, Strawberry Shortcake.
That's it? If you would have given me a few more minutes, I would have gotten it. Listeners, you might remember that when we discussed the TV movie The World of Strawberry Shortcake way back in episode 13 of this podcast.
Exactly. In that first meeting, there were only 6 of the characters on display, but by 1983, the line had expanded to 10 bears who were present at the New York City Toy Fair. Those characters who helped make this franchise so popular were Luck-a-Bear, Love-a-Lot Bear, Cheer Bear, Grumpy Bear, Tenderheart Bear, Wish Bear, Funshine Bear, Birthday Bear, Friend Bear, and Bedtime Bear.
I'm not sure if our friends listening could bear to hear you name more of the Care Bears, Todd.
Always with the puns, Vic. By 1984, thanks to companies like General Mills, Parker Brothers, and Kenner, the family of characters had expanded to include the Care Bear Cousins, which included a variety of animals that were not bears. While the Care Bear Cousins were first seen in the television special, The Care Bears Battle the Freeze Machine, it was the Care Bears movie in 1985 that showed fans how they became part of the family.
Should we talk about the animation company responsible for bringing it to the big screen before we begin the synopsis, Todd?
By all means, you take the lead.
Thanks. The Care Bears movie was produced by Nelvana, the Canadian animation studio based in Toronto. Our friends listening to this podcast might remember we talked about this legendary studio before on the 4th episode where we covered the classic The Devil and Daniel Mouse.
You wrote about your experience with their 1977 television special, A Cosmic Christmas, over at the Retroist site, didn't you?
I certainly did. One of the things we didn't mention on that earlier podcast was that the company's name came from a 1940s Canadian comic book character called Nirvana of the Northern Lights. The company, which was founded by Patrick Lubert, Clive A. Smith, and Michael Hirsch, found their first base of operations to be a rather rundown apartment. Getting their start in 1971, the trio had the good fortune to sell multiple shorts to the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, which allowed them to stay in the game, so to speak. The money from these projects allowed not only A Cosmic Christmas and The Devil and Daniel Mouse, but also gave them the opportunity to produce Please Don't Eat the Planet, or as it's also called, Intergalactic Thanksgiving, as well as Romeo and Juliet. In 1978, Nelvana really hit it big as they were hired to work on the Star Wars Christmas special, providing the animated segment that is fondly remembered for being the first time we get a look at Boba Fett. Then, in 1980, they were hired as one of the studios to work on the animated film adaptation of Heavy Metal, which, not to get ahead of ourselves, the Care Bears movie seems to use a few effects from that 1981 feature. In 1983, using The Devil and Daniel Mouse as a blueprint, Nelvana released their first feature-length movie entitled Rock and Rule. While it might be considered a classic today, it sadly failed at the box office, in no small part thanks to MGM and United Artists' failure to market the film correctly.
I know at the Starlight Starbright drive-in, both Heavy Metal and Rock and Rule performed admirably.
In my neck of the woods, we didn't get Rock and Rule, but the Razorback Theater did show Heavy Metal. Although, due to my age, I didn't get to see the movie for myself until it was played on the movie channel.
I'm almost afraid to ask, Vic, how old were you when you saw Heavy Metal?
too young? I was like 11, I think. Now, sadly, Nelvana had really hoped that Rock and Rule would rocket them to the top, and they had every reason to believe this would be a huge hit. So when it didn't perform to expectations, the company was looking at a dire situation, as they had invested nearly all of their money into the movie. Thankfully, they were hired to provide the first season's worth of animation for Deke's popular Inspector Gadget syndicated series, as well as working on those Strawberry Shortcake specials, and even the pilot episode for another American Greetings Corporation franchise, The Get Along Gang.
Nelvana obviously had a commendable track record with bringing the American Greetings characters to the small screen. So, after 8 months of production and a budget of just a little over $2 million, the Care Bears movie was released nationwide on March 29th, 1985, and ended up earning a staggering $34 million in ticket sales, which was the highest collected sum at that point for a non-Disney as well as for a Canadian animated feature. It also marked the first time a toy-based film was the subject of such a successful run at the box office.
Wait a second, Todd. What about 1977's Raggedy Ann and Andy, A Musical Adventure? That was based on a toy line, right?
Correct, but it did not even earn its production costs back at the box office. As the film begins, we the viewers find ourselves outside the Cherrywood Orphanage. We are introduced to a cute-as-a-button collection of children within, as well as their truly caring guardians, Mr. and Mrs. Cherrywood. Mr. Cherrywood, it would seem, has a tradition of regaling the little kitties with a bedtime story, their favorite being about the cheerful Care Bears and their home high in the clouds known as Care-a-Lot. Mr. Cherrywood provides limited narration throughout the film and is voiced by Mickey Rooney. The Nelvana Animation Studio has always been quite fond of music in their short films and feature films, working with John Sebastian of the Lovin' Spoonfuls on both The Devil and Daniel Mouse, as well as the Strawberry Shortcake Special. The Care Bears movie is no exception, as the talented singer and songwriter provides music throughout the film. However, our introduction to the land of Care-a-Lot is a montage of the Care Bears having fun with the moving vocals provided by none other than Carole King.
Throughout that montage that Todd mentioned, Friend Bear is keeping an eye on Earth with his star telescope to see where the Care Bears can be of assistance. He sees two very lonely-looking children named Kim and Jason, who we learn are orphans and have decided to close off their feelings to others because they are afraid of having people they care for taken away from them as their parents were.
It is not delved into, but I sense there was an accident that claimed the lives of Kim and Jason's mother and father. Friendship Bear, along with Secret Bear, who only communicates in whispers to his fellow bears, travel to Earth by way of a fluffy cloud car to rekindle the children's feelings. But their first encounter is somewhat of a disaster. They are not able to melt the coldness that Kim and Jason have become accustomed to. The two still feel that they are better off without friends.
I know I'm getting ahead of the synopsis once again, but I think we should point out that the safety of Care-a-Lot in the Earth is tightly connected to the amount of positive feelings at any given time. This is something the Care Bears help to protect by closely monitoring those in need, lending support and love to help raise their heart-shaped caring meter. Jason and Kim are not the only ones feeling blue in the film, as we next meet a teenager named Nicholas, a young man, as we are told, who literally has never had a friend in his entire life. Tenderheart Bear is on the case, though, to help the young man who works for an amusement park magician named the Great Fettuccini, who I admit seems to be rather a browbeater in regards to his ward.
It should be pointed out, though, that the filmmakers show he is in fact concerned for Nicholas a few moments later after being so gruff.
True. That concern comes about when Nicholas discovers an evil book of black magic in the trunk the Great Fettuccini just had delivered. The book itself is alive and wastes no time manifesting a green-hued woman's face between the pages, wooing Nicholas, who only wishes to be a magician, into using its dark powers at first for his own gain. But this is obviously a ploy, one that will end up nearly removing all feelings of caring from everyone in the world. Tenderheart isn't able to stop the book from warping the young man's feelings, though, and in fact is put into a cage when trying to interfere on Nicholas's behalf.
Rather ironic that we're discussing an animated film that focuses on the dangers of black magic, one that debuted a little over 31 years ago, considering the threat facing the world now, eh?
Exactly. I heard before we started recording, 6 new portals have opened up. But like you told me earlier, Todd, we can't dwell on the negative, my friend.
Quite right, Vic. We return to Care-a-Lot, where Grumpy Bear is working on a new invention called the Rainbow Rescue Beam, a device that will allow the Care Bears to be sent or brought back from Earth at a moment's notice. It appears, though, it's not quite running properly yet, which is a shame, as Tenderheart could certainly use some aid at the moment. Thanks to some shenanigans from the Care Bear cubs, Baby Hugs and Baby Tugs, the device is fixed and manages to teleport both Friend Bear and Secret Bear, as well as Kim and Jason, to Care-a-Lot. It doesn't take long for the Care Bears to change the children's dour attitude, thanks in part to the lively song provided by John Sebastian.
I know you're thinking that nobody cares. You've got some feelings you don't want to share. But if your troubles stay all stuck inside, they're gonna grow till they're too big to hide. I know you're trying to steer so clear of friends. You've had a few that left you in the end. I gotta tell you, it ain't always so. Somebody loves you who ain't gonna go. So follow me and let me take you where. If you think nobody cares,
nobody cares,
nobody cares like a bear.
Hey, if that song doesn't put you in a good mood, nothing will. The Care Bears succeed in helping Kim and Jason embrace their feelings once again. And just in time, for Tenderheart to return to Care-A-Lot after escaping that cage at the amusement park. It's a dire picture, though, that the Care Bear paints. Nicholas has used the black magic of the book to ensure the entire town is filled with nothing but angry and aggressive people. The blue skies have darkened as the evil book's magic grows stronger and stronger. So much so that Care-A-Lot is badly damaged by an attack called a cloud quake. While most of the Care Bears remain behind to help repair their home, Jason and Kim show how much their hearts have been healed by their brief visit as they receive joyous news. They are due to be adopted when they get back to Earth, but the children decide to stick with both Secret Bear and Friend Bear to help save Nicholas. So they travel back to Earth thanks to the Rainbow Rescue Beam. Except another cloudquake strikes and knocks the machine offline in mid-teleportation.
Indeed. The second attack causes the teleportation beam to not reach Earth, but deposits the four in a colorful jungle setting where they come in contact with a curious group of animals, which we all know will become the Care Bear cousins. Meanwhile, a group of the Care Bears back in Care-A-Lot decide to chance the river that flows through their home into the unknown aboard the most cheerful sailing vessel you've ever seen, the Cloud Clipper. They hope that they can find a way to reach Earth and combat the evil spirit within that book of black magic. But it ends up taking them to the Forest of Feelings, exactly where their missing friends were teleported. With the aid of Braveheart Lion, Playful Heart Monkey, Cozy Heart Penguin, Swift Heart Rabbit, Lotsa Heart Elephant, and Bright Heart Raccoon, the four are reunited with the rest of the Care Bears in the Cloud Clipper. And just in time to use their one defense against evil, the Care Bear Stare, which causes beams of colorful energy to emit from the symbols in their chests, banishing a shape-shifting agent of the book that takes on various animal forms in an attempt to snatch Kim and Jason, bringing them to the possessed Nicholas. Because, you see, they are literally the only two people remaining from Earth who have any feelings.
Todd, I know we've both gone on record numerous times stating our dislike of the horror genre, but this movie finds the perfect balance in its, quote, scary moments. Some very young viewers might feel a little uncomfortable, but it never crosses the line. Back to the synopsis. It not only looks like the end for Care-A-Lot, but the evil spirit within the book is just about to achieve the complete eradication of goodwill on the Earth itself. The Care Bears arrive in force to attempt to save the day with their Care Bear Stare, and the Care Bear Cousins reach deep within themselves to harness what they name their Care Bear Cousins Call, which does seem to temporarily allow Nicholas to regain his senses, but the spirit within the book, its hold is just too strong. It takes the added show of caring and support by Kim and Jason towards Nicholas that lets the young man finally be able to get the upper hand and seal the Book of Dark Magic, which reverts all of the feelings that were stolen as we see the world and Care-A-Lot are saved. Things are looking rosy all around as Nicholas is made a partner of Fettuccini's, and we get to see Kim and Jason attending one of the young man's magic performances with their new parents. Back in Care-A-Lot, the cousins are inducted into the Care Bear family proper, receiving symbols on their chest to match their inner strength. This is all shown thanks again to a musical montage, with John Sebastian once again lending his voice.
Now all you Care Bear cousins coming, gather next to me. We're standing here together, just as proud as we can be. We saved the world from caring folks like you and me.
And when you care together, you become a family. And it's great to be in that Care Bear family.
In that Care Bear family.
And I'm proud to see that you're standing here with me.
You're standing here with me.
That segment of the film includes a sing-along portion, and I can tell you, dear listeners, that the second night I showed this at the drive-in, we were happy to hear the spring evening air filled with the raised voices, all those children and their families, a very fond and warm memory for myself. Speaking of a warm feeling, the filmmakers saved the most moving moment for the end of the film. Having reached the end of the story, we see that all of the children in the orphanage have fallen asleep. Mr. Cherrywood, it is revealed, is none other than a grown-up Nicholas, with Mrs. Cherrywood turning out to be Kim. Their adventures with the Care Bears and their cousins, guiding them to their life's calling of caring for children, providing the love and support they lost briefly in their own youths. As the film ends, we see that Tenderheart has been listening outside of the window, checking in on old friends to make sure all is well.
I have no problems admitting that I get kind of choked up at the end when Kim asks Nicholas what she's going to do with him in regards to him still being a child at heart, and he responds, "Care for me, Mrs. Cherrywood. Just care for me." Now, Care Bears the movie was a happy ending for Nelvana, mostly. While getting hired to do the film certainly saved the animation company, they were not entitled to any of the cut from the $34 million profit. They weren't swindled or anything devious like that. It's just their financial situation before production, in part to Rock and Roll, meant they couldn't take the promise of a cut of the profits after the film was released. They needed the money they accepted to produce the film, to keep their lights on. Having said that, though, they were hired to deliver the 1986 sequel, Care Bears Movie 2, A New Generation, as well as 1987's The Care Bears Adventure in Wonderland. These sequels didn't nearly reach the worldwide acceptance as the Care Bears movie did, but it kept the franchise alive, even to this day, with subsequent TV specials and series. Todd, before we talk about the notable cast and crew for this film, do you have any vintage television commercials to share with the listeners?
You know I do.
We'll return after these messages.
Gotta hurry, Funshine, can't be late. Wake up, Bess and Bess.
It's Kenner's Care Bears, each sold separately.
Every day can be a Care Bear day. You can play in a caring way.
Welcome to our treehouse, Love Rock Bear.
You too, Funshine Bear. Rise and shine, Bedtime Bear.
Every day can be a Care Bear day.
Each sold separately, Bedtime Bear, Love-A-Lot Bear, and Funshine Bear are part of the Care Bears collection from Kenner.
When a friend comes over to play, sharing is fun, the Care Bears way.
It's three of the Care Bears, each sold separately.
Moving's fun, Share Bear.
Need a hand?
Gee, thanks, Friend Bear.
What about Champ Bear? Can we help?
Sure, Champ.
Helping friends when they're new shows the caring side of you. Every day can be a Care Bear day.
Each sold separately, Friend Bear, Share Bear, and Champ Bear are all part of the Care Bears collection from Kenner.
Mickey Rooney might be the most famous of the thespians to lend his voice to the film, but the evil spirit in the book was played by Jackie Burroughs. You listeners might know her best from...
What was that?
Attention, Retroist industry employees. The vault has been breached. All employees to the weapons vault and prepare to repel the invaders. Remember, if we all do our part, we can win this war.
Dear listeners, I am positive you heard that announcement. The Retroist Vault has been breached by the evil from the portals that began to appear across the world a little over a year ago.
Well then, I think a little fighting music is in order. Todd, it's been an absolute pleasure to be your co-host.
The feeling is mutual, my friend. Let us drive these demons back to their dark dimension. Back to Bill Darnell.
Yeah!
just happened.
We obviously were shunted to yet another timeline. Briefly.
Yeah, one in which you were never hurt in that fire at the Haunted Drive-In. I was your co-host. Yet, a reality where Bill Darnell was attacking the Earth.
It was indeed a nightmarish situation, Victor.
Agreed, my friend.
We reviewed Children's Fair. We didn't discuss horror films. How frightening.
I was referring to what might be that reality's end of the world, projectionist.
Oh, right. So very sad. But to be fair, that reality's Todd Browning and Victor Sage didn't seem like they were ready to give up the fight just yet.
Well, I certainly hope they're okay. I'm exhausted from all this. And it looks like we've run out of time. We'll have to talk about gremlins on another podcast.
Indeed. We're needed up top. We need to get that first reel of the Little Shop of Horrors ready to go.
I guess that about wraps up the show. On behalf of the projectionist and myself, we thank you for listening to the Saturday Frights podcast. Our new intro was provided by the talented Metagirl. Our ending theme is entitled Twisted Toys and was composed by the talented Tony Longworth. You can listen to even more of his music on SoundCloud and on his official site, which you can reach at www.tonylongworth.com. Of course, I have to give thanks for the invaluable feedback to my co-host, The Projectionist. And if you happen to be new to our show, we do have a Saturday Frights Facebook page as well, and we would greatly appreciate it if you could stop by and give us a like, or even let others know about it. It's another spot where we can share our love of retro horror with you. The podcast is available on iTunes and Stitcher, and we would certainly appreciate it if you could click subscribe. Leave us a nice review if you're pleased with our work. I can be found nearly every day on The Retroist. If you have any suggestions for future shows or even feedback, you can contact me at vicsage@retroist.com. We, of course, owe a great debt of gratitude to The Retroist himself. When you have retro needs, and we all do, just head over to www.retroist.com. Until next time, remember to replace your car's speaker on its post before leaving the drive-in, as we play a trailer from the subject of our next show.
I wanted to show you this, Professor. It's the Congressional Medal of Honor.
Very prideful thing, Mr. Beechcroft. Very prideful thing. And I am indeed proud of you. You were always a fine young man.
This has been a Retroist production. Goodbye.